Stephen Piercy on the hotline right now. I feel like I woke him up, but he's up and around now.
Excellent, man. Well, listen, he's a goddamn rock star. God's sake, man. If there's anything, I don't think there's anything less fun for a rock star than getting up to talk to radio dicks early in the morning.
The best part is sitting in the living room last night with my daughter. I told Steven I'd send him a reminder about the interview, and we're texting back and forth. And I told Ella, I was like, if my 13-year-old self told me
I'd be texting
that I was texting with Stephen Piercy, like, I'd be going out of my mind, like, freaking out about it.
No, there are moments in life, and that's what's lucky about this gig, right? Over the years, you meet these guys who truly were so much bigger than life and really are legend, icon, part of the pantheon of real of rock and roll.
It's like that show that I went to see when they opened for Billy Squire at Starlight. The two things I remember are Rat absolutely destroyed it, and during set change, they played the Rockford Files theme.
Born July 3rd in Long Beach, California, he started his music career in San Diego, but it wasn't until he moved to Hollywood in 1980 when things started to explode. And in 1984, the band released the album that would make them international superstars. The album was Out of the Cellar. The band was Rat, and his name is Stephen Piercy. The band would rack up numerous gold, platinum, and multi-platinum albums worldwide. And he's recently announced a solo tour back in the cellar, celebrating the 40th anniversary of Rat's debut album with stops in Sturgis, the Monsters of Rock Cruise, and in Branson on August 22nd. Please welcome legendary Rat frontman Stephen Piercy.
Mr. Stephen Piercy, how are you, brother?
Hot damn.
Damn, man. Listen, still happening. It's impossible to Out of the Cellar came out 40 years ago. I just feel like it's absolutely impossible that I picked it up.
I know.
Record Bar. I bought it because I remember the album cover. I remember flipping it over. I remember just all of it, man. That EP was just, it was everything, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a trip because I really don't think about those, you know, those the 80s to me were just a blur.
Sure.
You know, we just, you know, it just was, once we hit the ground, we were running. And you know, to this day, and this is the truth, I don't remember a lot of the 80s. I don't remember a lot of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, how could you, right? You guys, you and Motley ruled the Sunset Strip. It was the Roxy and the Whiskey and Gazzari's and the Troubadour and, you know, right, the Rainbow. And in the beginning, anytime you are the beginning of something, a true change in music, a shift in culture, like what mm-hmm. comes along with that? And you guys were absolutely the pinnacle. You guys, Quiet Riot, Motley Crue. It was the beginning of all of it.
Yeah, that's a good statement there. And I try to instill that because a lot of people think it started with these bands that, you know, pulled in mid-80s. And I think to myself, you know, I had to, you know, what we had to go through just to get things done. Right. But you're right. We did, you know, I pat myself on the back for that. I didn't think about it then, you know, but now I kind of go, yeah, you know, matter of fact, you know, when Motley and Rat hung out and just stumbled down the strip, you know, trying to get gigs and eat and, you know, I appreciate that.
But that's why it's still remembered and relevant like that, though. Like, and there are other bands that came after that I still liked, but they were handing out record deals. It was a feeding frenzy.
Yeah.
You guys, you had to earn it because nobody saw it coming. You know, you ended up with Burl as a manager. It was the nephew mm-hmm. of Milton Burl. And so it wasn't like CCA was knocking on your door. This was all, you were figuring it out as you went along.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's ironic is Marshall managed Van Halen when they first started.
That's right.
And that in 78, and that's when I first met them. I drove myself to the whiskey because a friend of mine kept saying, oh, you got to see this band. 1978. You got to see this band. They're playing Gazzaris. You got to see this band. They're great. And I was just really starting to get into playing and stuff. And, you know, and I never got up there. Then he called me one time. He goes, now they're at the whiskey. You know, you got to go see them. So one day I decided, okay, I drove myself up there and waited behind the whiskey until I saw one of them. And sure enough, I saw Dave, and I just yelled out, hey, Dave, you want to smoke a joint?
And that's great.
I got backstage, and I really wanted to meet Ed because I was more into guitars in the beginning, you know. I was singing and playing. And sure enough, and it's crazy that, yeah. And then I thought, years later, well, where was Marshall? I didn't meet him back then, you know.
Right. And
but he was managing them, yeah.
That was him. And then it went to Chipmunk, took over in what, 79 or 80?
Yeah.
Yeah, because all these names come together, like, because I'm such a nerd for all this. You guys, you know, the gang you guys formed, the Loose Gang, called what, the Gladiators?
The Gladiators, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, funny story about the Gladiators. We were doing the Troubadour. I mean, the shit I had to go through to just get my band to play. I was like the manager. I was the agent. I was the everything. And I'd be knocking on the door. So, you know, I go to the Troubadour, right? Okay, well, I get us in there. We're starting to play. And then out of the blue, Doug Weston, he goes, I can't let you play here anymore under the name Rat. And I go, you got to be kidding me. You're kidding me. And he's like, no. I go, okay. I go, I'm going to play in the name of the band's Gladiators. Right?
Right.
So we stamped Rat all over the tickets. And it was the Gladiators. And then after the show, which was sold out, he let me play there again as Rat, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course. But it's the stories about how you guys had to break it down, because once they smelled the blood in the water, of course, everybody, it was mayhem. But it truly was punk rock and new wave were the taste in L.A. And you were coming out of the classic rock thing, and there was a big clash between the punks and this new glam, sweet T-Rex metal rock type vibe that was happening. And it truly was a cultural shift. And, you know, and then guys, like, you think about Gazzaris, you think about the Rainbow, and you know, hell, man, half you guys would have starved to death if it weren't for chicken noodle soup in the kitchen at the Rainbow.
Oh, you're right. God, one time, you know, I'd find myself in the kitchen sitting there with Roth and Ozzy, and people thought we were doing drugs. We were talking about clothes, what we're wearing, who made them.
That's so great, man.
You know, it's funny, but, you know, and it's true. And I try to instill that into some people, you know, and tell them the real story is that, you know, it wasn't this hair metal thing, but, you know, I can swing with the hair metal thing these days because, you know, as soon as you say that, you're going to think of Motley, Rat, and whatever. So I can deal with it. But it wasn't hair metal back then. It was just, we were just rock bands.
That's right.
You know, that liked to, I mean, look, we were called Gladiators, and I called us, Robin and I, called ourselves Cement Pirates because we wanted to, you know, there was no glam, there was no hair metal, there was no hairspray, there was no none of that crap, you know. So these bands that came in later kind of, you know, put it this way, they kind of oversaturated the market.
That's exactly what happened. It went from this great thing. And again, there were some decent bands after, but the beginning of it was such a change. And I remember, you know, because we were kids that we loved Rat, we loved Motley, we loved Iron Maiden. Of course, AC/DC was to then, even back then, it felt like a classic rock band, but then Back in Black destroyed the world. And all of these incredible, exciting live music. And then the idea of it all, you're a kid, right? You're a teenage guy. Your hormones are going crazy. And you see these guys, every girl loves them. It's nothing but truly sex, drugs, and like the book, Rat and Roll. And you realize, I want this. Like this, I don't know how to get it, but I want to be at this too. So you were never going to miss a concert like that.
Yeah, every day was it was exciting. It was like being in at Disneyland. The minute we woke up, you know what we had to do to, you know, just to get the name. It's like the movie The Jerk when he gets a newspaper and he goes, I'm in the phone book or whatever.
Totally, you know? Totally right.
And that was me, you know, getting the band out there going, we're finally on the LA Weekly. We're in the Reader. We're, you know.
Oh, yeah. I do it all the LA Rocks and all those magazines. When I was 18,
right,
I moved out to LA in 87. And I just lived over off Yucca, and I wasn't even in a band. I just wanted to, I knew I didn't want to stay where I was, and I wanted to go to where I'd read and seen and heard. And it was truly like leaving the planet and going to an entire new universe. I lived off Island and Yucca.
It was still kicking around then. And then it just, you know, around, I would say, late 80s, it kind of just, you know, petered out the scene. There were, I think we, the bands that were, rose above the you know,
right,
rose above, we were already out doing our thing. And then it was, you know, a mass of shit, you know.
Right, right. Well, no, that's
and there
happened.
Hasn't been any good bands coming out of L.A. And as far as I know, since. You know,
well, you know, there's bands you got to dig for, like, you know, and again, you have to be a true music nerd. You're right. The cultural shift that happened, it changed. It's not getting out to the public. There's definitely ones ones that you feel like you should have made it. There were bands, you know, like weird ones like Electric Love Hog or Love Hate. And you know, Pearl and I have been friends since that record came out. Hell, I used to live at my house here in Kansas City. And he's got his history with Rat. And I know you guys are good with each other. Mm. And and I believe he choked out Blotzer, so I think we all agree with that.
Well, the I didn't mind it because I was doing my own thing.
Sure.
And then when he pulled in, hey, look, I was making money regardless of him
That's
out
right.
there singing, so I didn't give a
shit. Yeah, well, and you were one of these guys. We were talking about it earlier. I remember being distinctly let down. I love Alice Cooper. I saw a picture in a magazine of him golfing with a former president, which is not a big deal now, but it broke my heart. I was like, "That Alice Cooper doesn't golf.
He doesn't get high." And that broke my heart.
<That's right. laughs> Then I see
and, you know, and I know the Coop, you know, so it was a trip, you know. I mean, look, when I first started getting into music, speaking to Alice, I thought he was a chick. My friend who kept telling me to go to L.A., and who really helped me, Mickey Ratt and Ratt, he paid for the EP, I mean, for my single that I made in 1980 that I used to get into gigs for promotion and stuff. He had a poster of Alice, the one off the Killer albums,
awesome.
You know, where he's kind of like, looks like he's hanging on a noose.
Yeah.
And every time I go to his house, I thought it was some ugly chick, you know. He's like, it's f***ing Alice Cooper, man. He's hot. He's this great guy. And I was like, okay, there we go.
But then you came along, and that weird disappointment of seeing Alice be sober and golfing, which is obviously now I understand it's fine, but
jumped
into Top Fuel, and I was like, now that's what a goddamn rock star does. He gets in, and he races cars at 290 miles an hour in the quarter. Like,
well, that's what I was supposed to be doing, you know. My history is I was a pit crew guy as a kid, and then, you know, I ended up in a hospital on my back for 6 months, and somebody gave me to use the guitar, and I just adapted and then started getting really serious about doing it. As soon as I saw Van Halen, and I met Ed that night when I went there, which is crazy because, you know, I hold it so dear to me. And we were actually neighbors, too, in the late 80s. And, you know, I just wanted to meet him. We traded gear, and then next thing you know, I'm up there every weekend telling my guys in San Diego and Robin and his band and people, you got to see this band. You got to see this band, this guitar player. I know the guy. Let's go to his house. And he was still living with his mom, you know, in Pasadena. And it's just crazy to think about it, you know. God bless him, rest
sure.
in peace.
Oh, indeed, you know? Man. Well, listen, you guys, I remember working at a record store. No, going to a record store, first of all, before I got a job, and getting the EP before Out of the Cellar came out, and hearing, and it was a cover of Walking the Dog, which knocked my ass off. I just thought it was so incredible. And then Back for More, and You Think You're Tough is on it, and Sweet Cheater. And then, of course, the video that changed everything for Round and Round. Like you weren't alive in that decade if you hadn't seen it 10,000 times.
Yeah, right. And you want to hear a story which I found out just a couple of years ago from Bo Hill, the guy who produced that album, and I still talk to him to this day. Is the Round and Round wasn't supposed to be the first single. Thank God it was. But here's the story. The story goes, Doug Morris, president of Atlantic Records, was, listening to tapes, and literally cassette tapes and of new bands on the label. And he's listening to the some of our demos and stuff. And his kid, his grandson or something, was running around the house, and he kept going round, 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 and Doug went, that's the single, Round and Round. So the song was actually picked by Doug Morris's grandson.
The odds.
It was supposed to be Back for More, which came with the second single.
But isn't it crazy how many times you'll hear those stories about, you think you know the song, and it just, or a song that wasn't even supposed to be on an album that turns out to be the biggest thing a band's ever done.
Yeah, it blew my mind when I found this out. I was like, oh my God, Bo told me, and I was like, this is crazy.
Oh, dude, if you're just joining the show, legendary Stephen Piercy, lead singer of Rat, and so many other bands. I remember when Arcade came out, and I mean, even stuff like Vicious Delight, the solo stuff, all of it, man. You're one of these guys, and you played Rockfest for us here in Kansas City at the Speedway.
Yeah, and I'm getting ready to stop by there again, Branson or something.
Branson, just down the road. You're about two and a half hours away. Yeah, Branson that'll be a fun gig as well, man.
I'm playing the whole record out of the cellar, which the band has never done. I think we attempted it, but it didn't really go down right. But I'm doing it now, and it's really going over well. And then we play, the hits after that.
But you think about that. Wanted Man into, Back for More, Scene of the Crime, Trouble, man. I mean, of course, Round and Round, Lack of Communication, which is
You Are in Trouble is so fun to play. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I didn't know how fun. Some of these songs I hate singing, like Dance, I hate doing that song.
Right.
I hated it, but You're in Trouble and Scene of the Crime. And then I'm playing, if they have the proper utensils and screen to help, I'll be playing all the videos with, behind me. So it'll be cool.
Listen, man, I may roll down for that one, but it's just always good to talk to you, Stephen. Dude, I'm just a huge fan, and you've always represented that band and that your music so well, dude. You wear your legend really well.
I appreciate that. I mean, I'm the last man standing right now, and I'll go down with my ship, but until I get my job done, I have a great time now. I mean, it's a whole different trip. Now people will probably trip on me. He's sober now, But, I have such a good time now playing. It's just amazing. I love the meet and greets. I hear the stories. I spend time with these, with people. And that's what really lets me know, hey, I think we did something special, you changed their lives. And so I really do appreciate that. So we're having a great time out there on this Back in the Cellar tour. And I have a solo record coming, and then there's going to be another Rat release coming up here soon. It's going to be, I can say, it's going to be another box set, but it's going to be way different. And we're going to... What I wanted to do on the last box set that came out last year, I wanted to put a song on there called Reach for the Sky.
I remember.
That we recorded during the Cellar sessions, and it didn't make the record. I found the song, and we're going to give people a surprise on the next rap box set.
Dude, it's so many... Because I'm thinking about, here's a weird story, because I know that most people didn't realize that EP, when you guys shot the album cover for that, that's Tawny Kitaen, who, you're a music nerd, you'll know that she married David Coverdale from Whitesnake. She was the girl in all the Whitesnake videos, but those are her legs with real rats on them.
Oh, yeah, me and Robin, it was Nils Lozar shot it, and we nickeled and dimed, that for that record, and we called this place, and we actually rent a rat, And Robin and I, you know, stood on each side. Robin is Robin's girlfriend from grade school, you know, or school, high school, whatever, in San Diego. But when we did that, it was insane. And I'll tell you something after this. But anyway, Neil was just like, okay, one, two, three, throw the rats. So me and Robin threw the rats on her, you know.
That's great.
And I'll tell you what, if you look at the album carefully, there's six rats. There was only supposed to be five. And we don't know where the other guy came from. True story. I swear to you, count the rats in your shit.
Oh, dude.
And that dude was not supposed to be here.
Anytime, man. You are welcome here. Anytime,
Steve. Thank you, brother.
I really appreciate you, man. Hold on. Say that. What a good dude, man.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.